Hello and welcome to the first ever Special Noodles featuring Buddy Holly.
You don't like crazy music, you don't like rocking bands, you just wanna go to a movie show and sit there holding hands. You're so square,
baby, I don't care.
I don't know why my heart flips, I only know it does. I wonder why I love you, baby. I guess it's just because you're so square.
Baby, I don't care.
You don't know any dance steps that I do.
Hey.
I only know I love you like I do. I don't know why my heart blips. I only know it does. I wonder why I love you, baby. I guess it's just because you're so square.
Baby, I don't care.
I don't know why my heart flips, I only know it does. I wonder why I love you, baby. I guess it's just because you're so square.
Baby, I don't care. Baby, I don't. I don't care.
Buddy Holly was born Charles Harden Holly on September 7th, 1936 in Lubbock, Texas. He was the fourth child of Lawrence O'Dell, or L.O. to his mates, Holly, and Ella Pauline Drake. He had four elder siblings, and from his early childhood he was nicknamed Buddy. During the Great Depression, the Hollies frequently moved residence within Lubbock. L.O. changed jobs several times. Buddy Holly was baptized a Baptist, and the family were members of the Tabernacle Baptist Church. The Hollies had an interest in music. All the family members, except the father, were able to play an instrument or sing. The elder Holly brothers performed in local talent shows. On one occasion, Buddy joined them on violin. Since he could not play it, his brother Larry greased the strings so it would not make any sound. The brothers won the contest. During World War II, Larry and Travis were called to military service. Upon his return, Larry brought him a guitar with him he had brought from a shipmate while serving in the Pacific. Age 11, Buddy took piano lessons but abandoned them after 9 months. He switched to the guitar after he saw a classmate playing and singing on the school bus. Buddy's parents initially bought him a steel guitar, but he insisted that he wanted to play a guitar like his brothers. His parents bought the guitar from a pawn shop and Travis taught him to play it. During his early childhood, Holly was influenced by the music of Hank Williams, Jimmy Rogers, Hank Snow, Bob Willis and the Carter family. At Roscoe Wilson Elementary, he became friends with Bob Montgomery, and the two played together practicing with songs by the Lewin brothers and Johnny and Jack. They both listened to the radio programs Grand Old Opry on WSM, Louisa and a Hayride on KWKH and Big D Jamboree. At the same time, Holly played with other musicians he met in high school, including Sonny Curtis and Jerry Allison. In 1952, Holly and Jack Neal participated in a duo billed as Buddy and Jack in a talent contest on a local television show. After Neal left, he was replaced by Montgomery. They both billed as Buddy and Bob. The tune started performing on the Sunday Party Show on KDAV in 1953 and performed live gigs in Lubbock. At that time, Holly was influenced by late-night radio stations that played blues and rhythm and blues. Holly would sit in his car with Curtis and tune to distant radio stations that could only be received at night, when locally transmission ceased. Holly then modified his music by blending his earlier country and western influence with R&B.
Blue days, black nights, blue tears keep on falling for you, dear. Now you're gone. Blue days, black nights, my heart keeps on calling for you, dear. And you alone.
Memories of you make me sorry. I gave you reason to doubt me, but now you're gone, and I am left here all alone with the blue memories I think of you. Realize I would miss you the way I did, and now somehow I know I will pay for the times I have made you blue. Memories of you make me sorry. I gave you reason to doubt me, but now you're gone, and I am left here all alone with the blue memories I think of you.
By 1955, after graduating from high school, Holly decided to pursue a full-time career in music. He was further encouraged after seeing Elvis Presley performing live in Lubbock, whose act was booked by Pappy Dave Stone of KDAV. In February, Holly opened for Presley at the Fair Park Coliseum, in April at the Cotton Club, and again in June at the Coliseum. By that time, he had incorporated into his band Larry Wellborn on the stand-up bass and Allison on drums. As his style shifted from country western to rock and roll due to seeing Presley's performance and hearing his music. In October, Stone booked Bill Haley in his comments and placed Holly as the opening act to be seen by Nashville scout Eddie Crandall. Impressed, Crandall persuaded Grand Old Opry manager Jim Denny to seek a recording contract for Holly. Stone sent a demo tape, which Denny forwarded to Paul Cohen, who signed the band to Decca Records in February 1956. In the contract, Decca misspelt Holly's last name, Holly, without the E. From then on, he was known as Buddy Holly. On January 26, 1956, Holly attended his first formal recording session, which was produced by Owen Bradley. He attended two more sessions in Nashville, but with producing, selecting the session musicians and arrangements, Holly became increasingly frustrated by his lack of creative control. In April 1956, Decca released Blue Days, Black Nights as a single with Love Me on the B-side. Denny included Holly on a tour as the opening act for Farron Young. During the tour, they were promoted as Buddy Holly and the Two Tones, whilst later, Decca called them Buddy Holly and the Three Tunes. The label later released Holly's second single, Modern Day Don Juan, backed by You Are My Only One Desire. Neither single made an impression, and on January 22, 1957, Decca informed Holly his contract would not be renewed, but insisted he could not record the same songs for anyone else for 5 years. Holly was unhappy with the results of his time with Decca. He was inspired by the success of Buddy Knox's Party Doll and Jimmy Bowen's I'm Sticking With You, and visited Norman Petty, who had produced and promoted both records. Together with Allison, bassist Joe B. Molden, and rhythm guitarist Nicky Sullivan, he went into Petty's studio in Clovis, New Mexico. The group recorded a demo of That'll Be the Day, a song they had previously recorded in Nashville. Now playing lead guitar, Holly achieved the sound he desired.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye, yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie, cause that'll be the day when I die. Well, you give me all your loving and your dirt loving, all your hugs and kisses and your money too. Well, you know you love me, baby, still you tell me maybe that someday, well, I'll be through. Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye, yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie, cause that'll be the day when I die. you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie, cause that'll be the day when I die. Well, when Cupid shot his dart, he shot it at your heart. So if we ever part, then I'll leave you. You sit and hold me and you tell me boldly that someday, well, I'll be through. Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie, cause that'll be the day when I die. Well, that'll be the day. Ooh, ooh, that'll be the day. That'll be the day. Ooh, ooh, that'll be the day.
Petty became his manager and sent the record to Brunswick Records in New York City. Holly, still under contract with Decca, could not release the record under his name, so a new band name was used. Allison proposed the name Crickets. Brunswick gave Holly a basic agreement to release That'll Be the Day, leaving him with both artistic control and financial responsibility for future recordings. Impressed with the demo, the label's executive released it without recording a new version. I'm Looking for Somebody to Love was the B-side. The single was credited to the Crickets. Petty and Holly later learned that Brunswick was a subsidiary of Decca, which legally cleared future recordings under the name Buddy Holly. Recordings credited to the Crickets would be released on Brunswick, while the recording under Holly's name were released on another subsidiary label, Coral Records. Holly concurrently held a recording contract with both labels. That'll Be the Day was released on May 27, 1957. Petty booked Holly and the Crickets for a tour with Irvin Field, who had noticed the band after That'll Be the Day appeared on the R&B chart. He booked them for appearances in Washington, D.C., Baltimore, and New York City. The band was booked to play at the New York's Apollo Theatre on August 16th to the 22nd. During the opening performances, the group did not impress the audience, but they accepted after they included Bo Diddley in their shows. By the end of their run at the Apollo, That'll Be the Day was climbing to the charts. Encouraged by the single's success, Petty started to prepare two album releases, a solo album for Holly and another for the Crickets. Holly appeared on American Bandstand, hosted by Dick Clark on ABC on August 26th. Before leaving New York City, the band befriended the Everly Brothers.
Every day it's getting closer, going faster than a roller coaster. Love like yours will surely come my way. Hey, 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 hey. Every day it's getting faster, everyone said go ahead and ask her. Love like yours will surely come my way. Hey, 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 hey. Every day seems a little longer, every way love's a little stronger, come what may. Do you ever long for true love from me? Every day it's a getting closer, going faster than a roller coaster. Love like yours will surely come my way. Hey, 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 hey. Thank you.
That'll Be the Day topped the US bestsellers in store chart on September 23rd and was number one on the UK singles chart for 3 weeks in November. On September 20th, Coral released Peggy Sue back with Every Day, with Holly credited as the performer. By October, Peggy Sue had reached number three on Billboard's pop chart and number two on the R&B chart. It peaked at number six on the UK singles chart. As the success of the song grew, it brought more attention to Holly, with the band at the time being billed as Buddy Holly and the Crickets. In the last week of September, band members flew to Lubbock to visit their families. Holly's high school girlfriend Echo Maguire had left him for a fellow student. Aside from Maguire, Holly had a relationship with Lubbock fan June Clark. After Clark ended their relationship, Holly realized the importance of his relationship with Maguire and considered his with Clark a temporary one. Meanwhile, for the return into recording, Petty arranged a session in Oklahoma City where he was performing with his own band. While the band drove to the location, the producer set up a makeshift studio. The rest of the songs needed for an album and singles were recorded. Petty later dubbed the material in Clovis. The resulting album, The Chirping Crickets, was released on November 27, 1957. It reached number 5 in the UK album chart. In October, Brunswick released the second single by the Crickets, Oh Boy, with Not Fade Away on the B-side. The single reached number 10 on the pop chart and 13 in the R&B chart. Holly and the Crickets performed That'll Be the Day and Peggy Sue on the Ed Sullivan Show on December 1st, 1957. Following the appearance, Nikki Sullivan left the group because of the intensive touring. On December 29th, Holly and the Crickets performed Peggy Sue on the Arthur Murray Party. On January 8th, 1958, Holly and the Crickets joined America's Greatest Teenage Recording Stars Tour. On January 25th, he recorded Rave On. The next day, he made his second appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show, singing Oh Boy.
Oh, the little things you say and do make me want to be with you. Rave on, it's a crazy feeling, and I know it's got me reeling when you say I love you. I know it's got me reeling when you say I love you.
Buddy Holly departed to perform in Honolulu, Hawaii on January the 27th and then started a week-long tour of Australia. In March, the band toured the United Kingdom, playing 50 shows in 25 days. The same month, his debut album, Buddy Holly, was released. Upon their return to the United States, Holly and the Crickets joined Alan Freed's Big Beat Show tour for 41 dates. In April, Decca released That'll Be the Day, featuring the songs recorded with Bradley during his early Nashville sessions. A new recording session in Clovis was arranged in May. Holly hired Tommy Allsop to play lead guitar. The session produced a recording of It's So Easy and Heartbeat. Holly was impressed by Allsop inviting him to join the Crickets. In June, Holly travelled alone to New York for a solo recording session. Without the Crickets, he chose to be backed by a jazz and R&B band, recording Now We're One and Bobby Darin's Early in the Morning. During a visit to the offices of Pier South, Holly met Maria Elda Santiago. He asked her out on their first meeting and proposed marriage to her on their first date. The wedding took place on August 15th. Petty disapproved of the marriage and advised Holly to keep it secret to avoid upsetting Holly's female friends. Friends. Petty's reaction created friction with Holly, who had also started to question Petty's bookkeeping. The Crickets, frustrated because he controlled all the proceeds from the band, were also in conflict with Petty. Holly and Santiago frequented many of New York's music venues, including the Village Gate, Blue Note, Village Vanguard, and Johnny Johnson's. Santiago later said that Holly was keen to learn fingerstyle flamenco guitar, and that he would often visit her aunt's home to play the piano there. Holly planned collaborations between soul singers and rock and roll. He wanted to make an album with Ray Charles and Mahalia Jackson. He also had ambitions to work in film and registered for acting classes with Lee Strasberg's Actors Studio.
I saw a woman walking across the sand. She'd been walking 30 miles in Utah, Bomb Peter, with your brown eyed hands. Man, her destination was a brown eyed hand. Way back in 53,000 years, the back of here, this is the world began. There's been a whole lot of good women chasing tears upon my brown eyed hands. Man, a lot of trouble was a brown eyed.
danced and with a brown eyed handsome man. For the fun of self, a brown eyed handsome man. Barely two, three to count, and nobody gonna hear the high high end of the stand. Around the 30 was a hit for home, it was a brown eyed handsome man.
Santiago accompanied Holly on tours. To hide her marriage to Holly, she was presented as the cricket secretary. She took care of the laundry and equipment set up and collected the concert revenues. Santiago kept the money for the band instead of their habitual transfer to Petty in New Mexico. She and her aunt, Provy Garcia, executive of the Latin American Music Department at Pierce Southern, convinced Holly that Petty was paying the band's royalties from Coral Brunswick into his own company's account. Holly planned to retrieve his royalties from Petty to later fire him as their manager and producer. At the recommendation of the Everly brothers, Holly hired lawyer Harold Orenstein to negotiate his royalties. The problems with Petty were triggered after he was unable to pay Holly. At the time, New York promoter Manny Greenfield reclaimed a large part of Holly's earnings. Greenfield had booked Holly for shows during previous tours. The two had a verbal agreement. Greenfield would obtain 5% of the booking earnings. Greenfield later felt that he was only acting as Holly's manager and deserved a higher payment, which Holly refused. Greenfield then sued Holly. Under New York law, because Holly's royalties originated in New York and were directed out of the state, the payments were frozen until the dispute was settled. Petty then could not complete the transfer to Holly, who considered him responsible for missing profit. In September, Holly returned to Clovis for a new recording session, which yielded Reminiscing and Comeback Baby. During the session, he ventured into producing by recording Lubbock DJ Waylon Jennings. Holly produced the single, Joel Blon, When Sin Sops, Love Begins, for Jennings. Holly became increasingly interested in the New York music and recording publishing scene. Then Santiago and he settled in apartment 4H of the Brevoort Apartments, 11 Fifth Avenue in Greenwich Village, where he recorded a series of acoustic songs including Crying, Waiting, Hoping, and What to Do.
Maybe, baby, I'll have you. Maybe, baby, you'll be true. Maybe, baby, I'll have you for me. It's funny, honey, you don't care. You never listen to my prayers. Maybe, baby, I'll have you someday.
Inspiration to record the songs is sometimes attributed to the. Sorry. In October. Sorry, the inspiration to record the songs is sometimes attributed to the ending of his relationship with Maguire. In October, Holly recorded tracks for Coral. These were backed by saxophonist Boomy Richmond and an 18-piece orchestra composed of former members of the NBC Symphony Orchestra. The 3.5 hour session produced It Doesn't Matter Anymore, Reading in My Heart, Moon Dreams, written by Petty, and True Love Ways. Holly ended his association with Petty in December 1958. His band members kept Petty as their manager, and Holly also split from the Cricket. Petty was still holding the money from the royalties, forcing Holly to form a new band and return to touring.
The sun is out, the sky is blue, there's not a cloud to spoil the view, but it's raining, raining in my heart. The weatherman says clear today, he doesn't know you've gone away, and it's raining, raining in my heart. Oh, misery, misery. What's gonna become of me? I tell my blues they mustn't show, but soon these tears are bound to flow, 'cause it's raining, raining in my heart. But it's raining, raining in my heart. It's raining, raining in my heart. Oh, misery, misery. What's gonna become of me? I tell my blues they mustn't show, but soon these tears are bound to flow, 'cause it's raining, raining in my heart, raining in my heart, raining in my heart.
Holly vacationed with his wife in Lubbock and visited Jennings radio station in December 1958 for the start of the Winter Dance Party Tour. He assembled the band consisted of Waylon Jennings, electric bass, Tommy Allsup, guitar, and Cole Bunch, drums. Holly and Jennings left for New York City, arriving on January 15, 1959. Jennings stayed at Holly's apartment at Washington Square Park on the days prior to a meeting scheduled at the headquarters of the General Artists Corporation, which had organized the tour. They then travelled by train to Chicago to join the rest of the band. The Winter Dance Party Tour began in Milwaukee, Wisconsin on January 23, 1959. The amount of travel involved created logistical problems, as the distance between venues had not been considered when scheduling performances. Adding to the problem, the unheated tour buses twice broke down in freezing weather with dire consequences. Holly's drummer, Cole Bunch, was hospitalised for frostbite to his toes suffered while aboard the bus, so Holly decided to seek other transportation. Before their appearance in Clear Lake, Iowa on February 2nd, Holly chartered a four-seat Beechcraft Bonanza airplane from Dwyer Flying Services in Mason City, Iowa for Jennings, Allsup and himself. Holly's idea was to depart following the show at the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake and fly to the next venue in Moorhead, Minnesota via Fargo, North Dakota, allowing them time to rest and launder their clothes and avoid a rigorous bus journey. Immediately after the Clear Lake show, which ended just before midnight, Allsup lost a coin toss and gave up his seat in the plane to Richie Valens, while Waylon Jennings voluntarily gave up his seat to J.P. Richardson, the Big Bopper, who had influenza and complained that the tour bus was too cold and uncomfortable for a man of his size. Getting on the plane after the Clear Lake show, Allsop agreed to flip a coin for the seat with Valens. Allsop took out a brand new half dollar and Richie called heads. Heads it was. "That's the first time I've ever won anything in my life," Valens reportedly said. Allsop later opened a restaurant in Fort Worth, Texas called Heads Up. The pilot, Roger Peterson, took off in inclemental weather, although he was not certified to fly by instruments only. Shortly after 1 a.m. on February 3, 1959, Holly, Valens, Richardson and Peterson were killed instantly when their plane crashed into a cornfield 5 miles northwest of the Mason City, Iowa airport shortly after takeoff. Bodies of the entertainers were all ejected from the plane on impact. While Peterson's body remained entangled in the wreckage, Holly had sustained fatal trauma to his head and chest and numerous lacerations and fractures to his arms and legs. Holly's funeral was held on February 7, 1959 at the Tabernacle Baptist Church in Lubbock. The service was officiated by Ben D. Johnson, who had presided at Holly's wedding just months earlier. Pallbearers were Jerry Allison, Joe B. Malden, Nicky Sullivan, Bob Montgomery, Sonny Curtis and Phil Everly. Waylon Jennings was unable to attend because of his commitment to a still touring winter dance party. Holly's body was interred at the City of Lubbock Cemetery in the eastern part of the city. His headstone carries the correct spelling of his surname, Holly with an E, the carving of a Fender Stratocaster guitar. Maria Elena watched the first reports of Holly's death on television. The following day, she claimed she miscarried, although there is no independent source for this. Holly's mother, who heard the news on the radio in Lubbock, Texas, screamed and collapsed. Because of Maria Ella's miscarriage, in the months following the accident, the authorities implemented a policy against announcing victims' names until after families are informed. Santiago did not attend the funeral and has never visited the gravesite. She later told Avalanche Journal, "In a way, I blame myself. I was not feeling well when he left. I was 2 weeks pregnant. I wanted Buddy to stay with me. He had scheduled that tour. It was the only time I wasn't with him, and I blame myself because I know that if I had gone along, Buddy would never have gotten onto that plane."
Just you know why. Why you and I will by and by. No,
joys to share with those who really
Buddy Holly left behind dozens of unfinished recordings, solo transcripts of his new compositions, informal jam sessions with bandmates, or tapes demonstrating songs intended for other artists. The most recent recordings made in Holly's apartment in late 1958 were his last six original songs. In June 1959, Coral Records overdubbed two of them with backing vocals by the Ray Charles Singers and studios musicians in an attempt to simulate the established cricket sounds. Finished tracks were Peggy Sue Got Married and Crying, Waiting, Hoping. The new release was successful enough to warrant an album drawing upon the other Holly demos using the same studio personnel in January 1960. The demand for Holly records was so great and Holly had recorded so prolifically that his record label was able to release new Holly albums and singles for the next 10 years. Norman Petty produced most of these new additions, drawing upon unreleased studio masters, alternate takes, audition tapes and even amateur recordings, some dating back to 1954, with low fidelity vocals. The final new Buddy Holly album, Giant, was released in 1969. The single chosen from the album was Love is Strange. Encyclopedia Britannica stated that Holly produced some of the most distinctive and influential work in rock music. AllMusic defined him as the single most influential creative force in early rock and roll. Rolling Stone ranked him number 13 on its list of 100 greatest artists, Telegraph calling him a pioneer and revolutionary, multi-dimensional talent who co-wrote and performed songs that remain as fresh and potent today.
Love is strange. Love. We'll be right back.